It's Dialogue from WUOT News. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Good afternoon. Change came to Nashville in a big way last November. Later this month, we'll have a new governor for the first time in nearly a decade. Many sitting state legislators retired, stepped down, or found other jobs, opening up more than 30 slots in the House and Senate. Many of those elected, including Governor-elect Bill Lee, are first-timers. The legislature opened yesterday. Lee takes office on the 19th. So one of the biggest questions in the realm of Tennessee politics right now is, what's next? We hope to provide some answers to that question in the course of this hour. Joining us on the phone is Marta Aldrich, senior state house correspondent for the education reporting website Chalkbeat, where she covers Tennessee's K-12 education. Marta, welcome.
Thank you.
And joining us from the studios of Spotland Productions in Nashville, Tennessee, Sergio Martinez Beltran, state government reporter for Nashville Public Radio, also the host of the TriStar State, which is heard Mondays here on WUOT. Sergio, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And next to him is Chris Bundgaard, who covers state government for Nexstar Media. That's a company that owns a handful of Tennessee television stations, including Channel 6 here in Knoxville, WATE. Chris, welcome.
Glad to be here as well to join these two august journalists.
There we go. It's an august conversation taking place in January. I hope you'll forgive us that. But Chris, I'll begin with...
Sorry.
I should be sorry. I'm the one that made the joke. Chris, you and Sergio were in the Capitol as the session opened yesterday. What were some of your first impressions? Or were there any themes that emerged from your conversations with lawmakers or just what you've observed since the election here? As I said, we have a lot of first-timers. What's emerging for you as some overarching themes?
Well, I was listening to Sergio's report this morning, and he seemed to pick the same piece of sound that I did, that Glenn Cassada had on his speech yesterday when he said, it's going to be about, partnership, not partisanship. And, that'll be interesting to see how long that lasts. And I think that Bill Lee has echoed similar themes. And we'll see. I mean, there are, 26 Democrats in the House out of 99 members, only 5 Democrats in the Senate out of 33 members. So, they don't have to reach out necessarily to get things passed, but we'll see how that works. And of course, as you mentioned, Bill Lee is the great unknown, having never run for political office. And he talked in generalities about a lot of things. We'll see what he really will focus on here in this first month or two. And we'll be looking forward to the State of the State speeches.
And Sergio, sitting there in the studio in Nashville as well, this is, I believe, your first time covering the legislature. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. So you're coming in as a new guy, a lot of other new folks in there. What are you looking for this year?
It's interesting because when they say there's a lot of new faces, all of those faces are new for me. But I think it's important to know that I've talked to some of them already, and they're very hopeful that they'll be able to accomplish a lot in this legislative session. Granted, it's important to note that for the first time in 30 years, someone like Beth Harwell would not be there. And there's a lot of institutional knowledge that was lost during the last legislative session. So it's going to be an interesting transition for many of them. We have a new majority leader in the Senate. We also have a new majority leader in the House, and we have a new Speaker of the House with Glenn Cassada. So there's a lot of new people that are going to be in charge of making, and when I say new people to these positions, right? Mm-hmm. That are going to be making these decisions that are very important. But they're very hopeful. And like Chris was talking about, bipartisanship, that's one of the things that Glenn Cassada mentioned yesterday. I talked to Karen Kemper, the minority leader in the House, and she was telling me that that's possible, that she believes that they'll be able to work together to pass some legislation that could benefit everyone.
Marta Aldrich of Chalkbeat, Tennessee, I want to jump to you. Continuing on this theme of what's new, we're saying goodbye to a governor who wanted education and education reform to be a cornerstone of his legacy, welcoming a new governor who may have some different priorities. One thing we'll be watching, I know you're watching closely, is who Governor-elect Lee will choose as his education commissioner. This is the member of the cabinet that runs the Tennessee Department of Education, and a position that at times was a lightning rod in the Haslam administration. Is there a short list? Are there candidates that seem most likely to get the job, or any names that you're hearing?
Well, the Lee administration is being very tight-lipped, but they are interviewing candidates. I do know that. They are doing a national search. That national search also includes some school superintendents and other leaders in Tennessee. But in years, the job of school administration is become much more specialized. And if you look at school districts, especially the large ones, they all do national searches. So it only makes sense that if you're choosing the top leader of state government as far as running the education department and overseeing education policy, that you would also do a national search. So that is what is happening. Again, that may include interviews, and I'm sure it will, interviews with some of some people in Tennessee. But that's going to set the course for education policy, because that person is going to be implementing Bill Lee's vision for education over the next 4 years. So it's a key job.
When you say Bill Lee's vision for education over the next 4 years, this is something we know about in general terms, but not much in specifics. What has he said during and since the election that may give us some indication about how he's looking at education in his first term?
Well, he's not offered a lot of details, and we know on the campaign trail he talked a lot about elevating career and technical education. He talked a lot about raising pay for teachers, increasing school options for parents, but he's not given many details. I think the fact that he has chosen as two of his top policy advisors people who have been part of pro-school choice groups, is an indication that that's something that will be probably pushed at some point. Whether it will be pushed this year with things like vouchers, school vouchers, is uncertain. That's because, that is a gamble on his part. That would be a calculation. Would he want to go and try something that has been a perennial issue that has failed every year and possibly fail again? So he may calculate that he wants to hold off and get a budget under his belt and a first legislative session under his belt. We're just not sure yet.
Okay. Well, that raises an interesting point, and one that I definitely want to get to as we talk about this theme of change, what's new, what's old. And Chris, I can turn back to you on this. You're an old hand in Tennessee, covering Tennessee politics here, and you've seen this.
Just old.
Oh, now. You're only as young as you feel, I say. But I was curious, though, because you do have a lot of experience in watching these transitions and politics over the years. We know that even when the GOP holds a majority of the seats numerically, it doesn't mean you're going to get that many votes. The party in power doesn't always speak with one voice. Beth Harwell learned this the hard way in some of her dealings. Governor Haslam, the same thing. A very popular governor, always had high approval ratings, but not always probably well-liked around the halls of the Capitol. So when Bill Lee is coming in, it's not going to be like, snap, 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 here's my agenda, get it done. There may be some divisions here.
Well, very much so. And one of the themes that Glenn Cassada echoed again yesterday, and he said this before as he sought the nomination to be speaker, which became official yesterday, he said the House will lead. And he's talked about that with the state budget. And what does that mean exactly? And I've asked him this several different times, and he kind of comes back to that general term. But basically, he wants to put, have a real say, much more of a say in the House on, what's in the budget, how it progresses, that sort of thing, than in years past. At least that's what he's saying right now, and how that figures in the Senate and whether or not Bill Lee will be, leaning on him. But he's dealing with, 27, 28 new members who, don't even know how much the budget is, which is just going to be a little less than $40 billion this year, probably. Mm-hmm. So it is the great unknown. We don't know what kind of person what kind of governor Bill Lee will be. We can expect him to be socially conservative on a lot of issues. As Martha said, the VOTEC stuff that he would like to add to the training of that he'd like to add to K-12 is interesting, but we don't know how much something like that might cost. And increasing teacher pay. You've got to carve out the budget, make room for these kind of things. And we may get a little more of that in his inauguration speech, which was coming up in, 9-10 days?
So, yeah, that's right.
You know, that's what we're going to be, everybody's going to be looking at these little signs about which way Bill Lee may be going on these various issues.
And something, too, I guess, Sergio, that I'd like to bring up, too, is as we talk about, gosh, what's going to happen? What do the next 4 years look like? We have to remember we're at year number one. He has not taken office yet. Legislators were just began business yesterday. January is typically slow. And even so, a whole legislative session usually wraps up by the time we get to Memorial Day. So Sergio, talk about what are reasonable expectations for people who are looking for signs of change in these opening months of the Lee administration?
Well, to start, for the next couple of weeks, the legislature would go on break, essentially on a break. You know, they won't be conducting formal business. Yes, they have elected the speaker. They did elect the constitutional officers today, but they are not voting on anything for the next 2 weeks. And this break provides an opportunity for those new legislators, one third of them, to learn what you know they can expect in the next couple of months, but also to define their agenda. The caucuses are meeting to define their agenda as well. And the same with Bill Lee. You're right, it's new. But in reality, the reality is that next week he'll take office and he will have to start telling the legislator and the legislature what's his plan? What does he want to accomplish? So I think for the next couple of weeks, we should expect the legislature, Cassada, McNally, to start talking about what they want to accomplish this year. And then hopefully we'll have a better idea of what's the plan for Governor Bill Lee before the inauguration, before the 19th.
Actually, something that you just mentioned, something I want to talk about with Chris one more time before we jump to a station break. When you talk about, you mentioned Senator McNally, that's Randy McNally of Oak Ridge. He's one of our East Tennessee guys out here. And in a session that has seen more Middle Tennessee lawmakers coming up into legislative positions, we have to remember the Senate Speaker is from East Tennessee. And when you hear Glenn Cassada say he wants the House to lead, Chris, what does the Senate think about that? I don't know if they want to relinquish that role.
Well, if I might do my really bad imitation of Randy McNally, which is speaking really slow and not saying a lot, he does say a lot. He just takes a while to say it. I think he just is kind of sitting back. I haven't personally talked to him about that. I can just see him kind of grinning, as I'm sure Martha and Sergio realize, you might ask him a question like this. What does it mean that the House is going to lead? And he just kind of grins and, doesn't say much. But, with Ron Ramsey as lieutenant governor for so many years, his personality was such that it overshadowed, frankly, Beth Harwell in the House for a while. And to some extent, Bill Haslam, at least in his first term as governor. So you had that kind of sense the Senate was really, if things didn't go in the Senate, they wouldn't go up on Tennessee's Capitol Hill. And I think that's what Cassidy wants, that the idea that, hey, if it's going to work in the House, it'll work. So that's kind of what I would imagine that Cassidy is looking at, and just that, maybe legislation can be, incubated, and also it's a place that legislation may die, maybe the House more so than, in previous years being in the Senate.
We'll pause now for a station break. We continue our conversation about the year ahead in politics and education right after this. You're listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. You're listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Our theme today, new directions for state government with a lot of new faces and bringing in some new ideas. We're talking today with Sergio Martinez Beltran. He is the state government reporter for Nashville Public Radio and host of the TriStar State, which is heard Mondays here on WUOT. Chris Bungard covers state government for Nexstar Media, which includes Channel 6 here in Knoxville, WATE. And Marta Aldrich, senior state house correspondent for the education reporting website Chalkbeat. Marta, I want to begin this second portion of our conversation by talking a little bit more about education. This, of course, is a perennial issue. This is not new to the Lee administration or anybody on Capitol Hill this year, but we're going to see a transition to a new governorship. We're leaving behind Bill Haslam, who made a big deal and a big push for education at the K-12 level, at college levels and vocational training and other programs, now handing that legacy over to Bill Lee. Let's talk a little bit about how that legacy may fare under this administration. Do you think Bill Lee is willing to hold the line on things like, you know, Tennessee Promise and other programs that were launched under his soon-to-be predecessor?
Well, I think that is what everybody is watching very closely. A little history. Tennessee overhauled its K-12 education program under a massive school improvement plan that was launched in 2010 under former Democratic Governor Phil Bredesen. And interestingly, that the Haslam administration has, which is a Republican administration, has stood by that plan and has continued to hold the line on the roadmap that has been developed. And that roadmap is basically this. It's grounded in higher academic standards. It's grounded in a new test called TN-Ready to measure student growth and proficiency based on those new standards, and also policies that hold students, teachers, and schools accountable for results. Now, I think one of the big concerns that the Haslam administration and Governor Haslam has told me several times, he is concerned that the problems administering a clean TN-Ready test could undo and unravel all of the what he believes is very strong work to set the state up for success has appeared to set the state up for success as far as student gains that have occurred over the last few years in national tests. So that is a big question, and that is why Governor-elect Lee needs to administer a clean TN-Ready test this spring. That's a huge thing, and it's one of the big things that, again, Governor Haslam was never able to do in 3 years. Mm-hmm. In year one and year three, there were all kinds of technical problems in the transition to online testing. In year two, there were scoring problems, and in all 3 years, there were struggles to deliver the results of the tests in a timely manner that was helpful to school districts and educators. So that is, it's the problems with TN-Ready that has a lot of people who are very excited about the student gains that Tennessee has made on national tests, but it has them nervous that there could be some backtracking, especially if we don't have a clean administration this spring.
That doesn't come as any surprise, I think, to any of the four of us in this conversation. I mean, the TN-Ready problems that we've all reported on over the last several years, I'm glad you brought that up because I do want to spend a little bit more time on that for folks who are not following it too closely. This is going to be a big year for TN-Ready. This is the statewide student test series. Its vendor, the company that's doing the operation and making the tests, scoring them, is called Questar Assessment. It's under scrutiny for continuing problems, which you just outlined. Legislators have been exasperated. Governor Haslam has been exasperated. Outgoing Education Commissioner Candace McQueen has been exasperated. And so the state this year is getting ready to open up bidding to potentially get a new contractor in there. There's a possibility that Questar could lose this contract just, you know, 3 years after they got it.
Well, I think that the optics of that, I'm sorry, Marta, I didn't mean to interrupt there, but yeah, if they are bidding again, I think, as I've read in other reporting, but for them to get the contract again, I think you would hear lawmakers screaming in the halls of the legislature, I think. So that would, it's amazing when I read that, that they are bidding again, unless they've got a whole new group that has convinced somebody that they can do it much better than what they have been doing.
Yeah, Marta, what were you going to say about that? Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, at the same time, one needs to consider that there aren't a whole lot of companies out there that can do the kind of testing that Tennessee does on such a large scale. So it's a relatively small pool. I do think that one thing that Commissioner McQueen emphasized, and before leaving, and as they were setting up the request for proposals that is going out to companies, is that they are very open to having multiple companies administer TN Ready beginning in the fall of 2019. That it's hard for a single company to have all of the specialization that is required when it comes to the content and how to do assessment, how to do it online. So it's very possible that there will be more than one company who might be given the contract to continue on beginning in the fall of 2019. Again, Questar will be administering that test through its current contract this spring.
Mm-hmm.
And what the executives with Questar have told me is that we expect to do a clean test, and if we do so, we think that we're going to show people that we're getting it right now, and we should be considered to continue on.
I might note parenthetically, and Marta, you can correct my math if this is wrong, but if a new TN Ready vendor is picked this year, it would be the third company in 5 years that have been put in charge of it. Isn't that right?
That's true. Measurement Inc. was the first vendor.
Yeah.
They had a relatively short timeline to get that running, and it was a debacle. Testing was canceled for most Tennessee students that first year when there were significant technical problems. They were fired by McQueen, and then the current vendor, Questar, was brought in, and they have struggled to do it as well. So it is not an easy thing to do, and it is extremely important. Federal law requires that if you accept federal funding for schools, that you have to test and assess your students' progress every year. And it's also important because the state spends an awful lot of money on public education, and there needs to be a measuring stick to determine that they're getting their money's worth, that kids really are learning and progressing the way they should.
Okay. Sergio Martinez-Beltran, again, of Nashville Public Radio, I want to get you back into the conversation here and talk a little bit about what's coming down the pike in the non-education side of things here. One of the things we're going to be talking about will be criminal justice reform. And this is an effort that began in earnest under Governor Haslam, as we've seen some political and public opinion change on whether it's possible to be both tough on crime, as the saying goes, and have criminal justice reform at the same time. So we're seeing some changes on that, and it's one of the things I understand is on Governor-elect Lee's priority list. Could you give us kind of an overview about what we might be seeing coming down the pike on that?
That's right. We see that that's something that has bipartisan support from both chambers. And of course, Governor Bill Lee has been very vocal about it. He said that he wants the House to work in sentencing reform as well. And I think this is an important moment, especially after Santoya Brown was granted clemency this week. So it has momentum for sure. And we potentially will see the House and the Senate working on ways to make sure the criminal justice system is fixed. And with that being said, Governor-elect Bill Lee has also talked a lot about faith-based organizations and how they play a role in these criminal justice reform. So we're also gonna see organizations playing a role in how he addresses this issue.
And Chris, on that same subject, according to the Tennessean, a more comprehensive overhaul of state's criminal justice system will probably have to wait. Again, this is first year. We're still trying to find our offices. We're getting the hang of this thing. What reasonably might we expect to come out of this legislative session in the realm of criminal justice reform?
Well, that's a tough. I can't really answer that. I think it's. I don't think you're going to see overall reform. I think you're going to see the first and foremost. You know, they've got to get a budget going. And you know, he's got to give a sense of his priorities of things that he may want funded. And I think we're going to see the, you know, something about VOTEC, you know, education being part of K-12. I think, you know, there may be something about, you know, increased teacher pay, that sort of thing. And, you know, could there, I don't think we'll see an overall big package. I could be mistaken. It may be, you know, he may be a cornerstone of his first year. We just aren't getting much out of them. And there's no reason that we can expect that as well. The other thing is, you know, he's been pushed on healthcare, Bill Lee, during the campaign, and he's talked about that he won't be considering anything that might be of expanding Medicaid, the state's 10 care program, things like that. And he'd like to focus on cutting costs. Well, I was just happened to be talking with the governor today in his legacy interview, and I said, what does the governor do to affect healthcare costs? And he talked about some things that are going on in 10 care that will save the state money, that sort of thing. But it's not about access, about, you know, providing health care to those people who are the 300,000 or 400,000 Tennesseans who don't have it, which was the Insure Tennessee program that Governor Haslam proposed several years ago. You know, just never got off the ground, frankly. And, you know, I don't think we'll be looking at anything big like that, certainly, from Bill Lee. I think this year he's going to come into office very popular. I don't expect any, you know, large programs as such. You know, a few of the campaign promises will likely be kept and starting, you know, the ball down the road toward those things. But again, it's we'll find out a lot, hopefully, in his inauguration speech, which is 9 or 10 days from now.
And that's when that criminal justice aspect plays a role too, because I do think, I have to say that even though we haven't heard from Bill Lee yet, we've heard from the House on a couple of issues. We've heard about how they feel about the Nashville Community Oversight Board, that plays a role in this justice system. This board would be composed of community members, that they would be reviewing cases of police misconduct. And Glenn Cassada, Speaker Cassada, has already said that he wants William Lambert, the majority leader, to look into it because he has some concerns with the powers of that community oversight board, specifically the subpoena powers that it has. And he has also talked about how he's worried about the composition aspect of that board. The reality is that there's already community oversight boards in Knoxville and in Memphis. And so we could potentially see some push from the House, trying to push the governor-elect Bill Lee to like make a decision on that as well. And when we talk about the justice system as well, we can't forget the Department of Correction and how there's been issues with the privately run facilities in the state. And the House and the Senate have both been looking at Core Civic specifically on the Trostel Turner facility for the past couple of years.
That's worth mentioning, by the way, as we talk about Core Civic. That's a private for-profit prison operator that's based in Nashville and has a contract with the state to run prisons here in Tennessee. They've gotten in some hot water over things like medical care, the way things are treated, staffing issues that they've had, turnover, lack of prison guards. Governor-elect Lee has at least made one announcement, and that's that he's keeping the commissioner of the Department of Corrections, Sergio. What do you see in that?
Well, the reality is that Governor-elect Bill Lee has kept a lot of the commissioners that Governor Haslam had. So I think he likes, clearly, for him to stay with the commissioner, with Parker, he clearly likes what he has done, even though it's been controversial. He's been controversial specifically because of those of these Core Civic complaints and what is going on. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, Parker had to testify in front of a joint oversight committee and talk about Charles Dole Turner and talk about Core Civic. He said he's happy with how Core Civic has been addressing the issues that it was handling a couple of months ago. When we talk about those issues, understaffing, the conditions in the prisons are not the best ones. And so clearly he likes what Parker is doing, but we'll see if the legislature is going to push back and it's going to push him to potentially find another correction commissioner.
Chris, I want to get your two cents on the general topic here. When Governor-elect Lee has talked about fresh approaches, new ideas, I'm an outsider, but he's also chosen to retain at least five cabinet members from the Haslam administration. Is that significant? Is that unusual? What do we read from that?
Well, it's an interesting dynamic because we haven't had an administration go from Republican to Republican or Democrat to Democrat for decades. I mean, we're talking half a century, predates all of us, I believe. So, you know, and in one hand, you don't want to be seen as Haslam 2.0 if you're Governor-elect Lee. And on the other hand, there are people that, in some of these departments who have done well, by Governor-elect Lee's, estimation. The people who are around him have said, hey, look, this is a department that's going well. You know, this person is from East Tennessee, and this person is such and such. It kind of fits our campaign promises. We'll have people from all over the place in Tennessee to run this 23 departments. But he still wants to put his stamp on who these new commissioners are. And again, we're waiting to hear who's going to run education. And TDOT, we know that that John Schroer is going to be out of there. And he's probably a victim of being from Williamson County. And you mentioned it earlier, Brandon, mm-hmm. about all these folks from Williamson County, south of Nashville, that suburb which includes Franklin and Brentwood. And of course, that's where Lee's from. That's where Cassidy's from. There's so many that I can't.
Senator Blackburn.
There we go. U.S. Senator Blackburn. How soon we forget. And I think that's something that folks in Knoxville or Memphis or Tri-Cities or Chattanooga look at and go, what in the heck is all these people from Williamson County running the state? And, it was interesting you brought up the question of McNally, Senator McNally, the lieutenant governor, looking at this. I still think he has a very wry smile and goes, you haven't seen anything yet. We're going to be leading over here as well. We'll all work together. Maybe that's what it's all about.
We'll pause right now on that note. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment after this station break. You're listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. You're listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. We're talking today about the new year and potentially some new directions for state government and education in 2019. We're joined by Marta Aldrich, senior state house correspondent for the education reporting website, Chalkbeat, where she covers Tennessee's K-12 education. Chris Bungard covers state government for Nexstar Media. That's a company that owns Tennessee TV stations, including Knoxville's WATE. And Sergio Martinez Beltran, state government reporter for Nashville Public Radio and host of the TriStar State. By the way, if you want to follow their excellent reporting over the course of the legislative session, we have links to their Twitter accounts at our website. Just go to WUOT.org. You'll see the dialogue post on the front page, and you can check out their reporting for yourself. Marta, I want to come back to you as we begin this third and final portion of our show. We haven't talked about one of the education elephants in the room, so to speak. That's school vouchers. It is a topic that comes up from time to time. This is, again, not a new issue, but we have some new people, and there may be some change maybe in the legislature or in the governor's mansion about how receptive they may be to school voucher legislation. Governor-elect Lee has said he's at least open to the possibility. Here locally, the Knox County School Board was concerned enough about the potential for change on this front that they reminded our legislative delegation, hey, when you go to Nashville later this month, don't forget, we are opposed to this. So this is how this stands, at least right now. Could you give us some idea about what chances school voucher legislation might face or what we might see come out of the legislature this spring?
Well, the legislature hasn't passed vouchers in many tries over the last decade. And the reason is that rural Republicans have combined with Democrats to fight the proposal. That's a tough combination. And so I think the Lee administration is going to have to do their homework to see if the new makeup of the legislature is going to change that outcome. And if not so, they may decide, hey, let's pass on that this year and try to do it later. One thing I have heard is that if they pursue vouchers this year, they probably won't call it vouchers. They will. It probably will be in the form of education savings accounts. Now, just to give you distinguish between the two, vouchers are they allow eligible families to send their children to private schools of their choice using public funding that is set aside for their children's education. Education savings accounts are a voucher-like program. They represent kind of the next frontier of school choice policy, and they poll better with people when you ask about people's opinions of vouchers versus education savings accounts. Education savings accounts allow parents to withdraw their children from public schools and receive a deposit of public funding into savings-like accounts, and then they can draw from those funds to cover things like private school tuition and fees, online learning programs, private tutoring, homeschooling. These accounts, they're also called ESAs, have been gaining a lot of attention in other states, and we even have something like it in Tennessee for families of students who have some disabilities. It's called the IEA program, the Individualized Education Account program, and it is now in its I believe it started in 2017, so we're starting its
third year. Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you too, as we're on this topic of education, this is going to be an issue that doesn't necessarily apply to the legislature right now, but there is a lawsuit in progress that challenges the way Tennessee funds its public schools. And those of us who follow education closely know there's always going to be a little bit of grousing back and forth when the basic education plan, the BEP funding, is changed or announced, or one district gets more than another. This is a lawsuit that actually challenges that premise. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, now I believe that is actually the true elephant in the room. This lawsuit is now more than 3 years old. It was filed by Tennessee's two largest districts against the state over whether it allocates enough money to provide an adequate education, particularly for urban school systems that serve more students who live in poverty or have special needs or come from non-English speaking homes. So Shelby County Schools and Metro Nashville Public Schools are part of this litigation against the state. This is not being talked about very much, but it's sitting there on everybody's shoulder because unlike previous landmark lawsuits that reached the state Supreme Court and required the state to change the way it funds public education by looking at it from the perspective of equity, this is about adequacy. This is about, is the state putting enough in public education to meet its constitutional obligation to provide an adequate education for students? So in other words, it's not about how the pie is carved up. It's, is the pie big enough? And that that lawsuit is scheduled actually to be heard and go to trial in April in Nashville in Davidson County Chancery Court. Now, there was a last-ditch attempt by the Haslam administration to derail that lawsuit. They tried to go around the Chancery Court and get the State Appeals Court to consider an appeal for dismissal. But in December, the appeals court denied the state's application to do that. So at the moment, it appears it's headed to trial. Whether it will happen in April, I'm not sure, because the judge who was supposed to hear that case, Claudia Bonneman, is retiring, and so it's has been reassigned to another judge. It's a very dense file. It's actually hundreds of thousands of pages of documents. Mm. And while the new judge is very well versed in constitutional law, it's not sure whether a trial that's probably going to take 2, 3, maybe 4 weeks is going to be available on her docket. So again, something that everybody's kind of got their eye on, but nobody's talking a lot about.
Interesting.
But something that we are following and reporting on.
All right. Well, keep that in mind. I may have to call you back because if this gets confusing, I'll need someone who knows for sure. Let's go back to Chris and Sergio for a moment. And we mentioned this. This kind of touches on, as we were talking about the lawsuit, if Tennessee has to start putting out more money for education, that's going to take up an even larger portion of the state budget. And this is something, Chris, I know you've talked about even within our hour-long conversation so far, is this is one of the big question marks. Getting a new group of legislators and a new governor who's not necessarily well-versed in this kind of thing to put together a working budget for the state of Tennessee that's closing in on $40 billion. What are your thoughts on that? What are you hearing from lawmakers about how, I mean, do they think this process is going to go smoothly, or is this going to be a lot of, we're going to learn through trial and error because we're new?
Well, I think if you remember, almost every year up the state capitol in those last few days, they're fighting over, you know, funding, you know, a couple of million dollars here, a couple of million dollars there. They really don't have that much discretionary spending, probably. You know, I remember somebody once told me years ago, yeah, we fight over about $500 million a year in a good year, maybe $100 million here, $200 million there. You know, I think that, Governor-elect Lee is very popular right now. He presents himself well. He speaks wonderful, general ways of talking to folks. And I just don't see him as stepping in there and doing all this, you know, a lot of things in this very first year. I really don't. Now, again, we could be very surprised, but you want to be able to get out a budget that's clear and you know, has whatever is needed in there for the BEP. But, you know, as Marta said, this is huge if the state's funding formula is challenged and gets, you know, overturned, or all of a sudden they have a court at, you know, ruling that says, you got to do this. And, you know, that could mean, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars of change. And that certainly is something I would agree with her. And I will remember that. I even wrote it down here. You know, that is the real elephant in the room, perhaps, as we go forward here. Something to watch.
If I could add.
Sure.
If I could add, though, real quick, that is not going to happen overnight. That this, if the judge actually rules in favor of the school districts, there will be an appeals process that will take years. You can bet on it. So nothing is going to change overnight. But the way these kinds of large lawsuits happen is incremental by nature, and it could lead to eventually a Tennessee Supreme Court ruling along the lines of the landmark rulings that happened in the 80s and 90s that required the state to overhaul its school funding program. So.
Yeah,
just an additional thought there on that.
Yeah, and like many, I'm sure, high-profile cases, lawsuits that work their way through the court system, it's going to take place over a long period of time, and everybody, I'm sure, is going to get their chance to say what's on their mind about that. Sergio, I want to jump to you for a moment. As we get a little bit closer to the end of this hour, what we haven't talked about already that you're going to be watching as this legislative session unfolds and as Governor-elect Lee takes office?
So I'll be looking into medical marijuana. That's an issue that has been brought out multiple times. And the interesting thing is that it's being pushed by Republicans. Some Republicans are championing for medical marijuana in the state. Also be looking at sports gambling. There is a bill filed by Democrats, Senator Akbari from Memphis and Rick Staples of Knoxville. Pretty much this bill would authorize local government to allow sports gambling, allow sports betting. This is coming after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a ban on sports gambling. So these Democrats are trying to allow, you know, let the local governments, the local, you know, municipalities to decide if sports gambling would be allowed or not. And with that, it's going to be interesting to see if it you know, push us through, because that sports gambling, that, you know, that activity would be taxed, and that tax revenue would be sent to different, you know, budgets in a certain way. One of them is the general fund, but also the other one would be for community colleges. So that's something I'm looking at. And then there's this other thing that came out yesterday. It's not necessarily on bills, but it's mostly about policy and procedures. The House GOP caucus yesterday said that they're going to change their policy and they're going to be closing their caucus meetings. That's something that was not happening last year, or like the past 2 years, that hasn't happened. And they are asking now, they're telling us that the caucus meeting, at least in the House with the GOP, they're going to be presumed to be closed unless they tell us the opposite.
We'll work on them on that.
I wondered.
We'll work together.
Yeah, I wondered what the reaction was of the Capitol Hill Press Corps on that. It may seem like a procedural thing. I know Cameron Sexton was saying, look, this isn't that big a deal. We're going to let you guys into most of our meetings. We'll just tell you if it's otherwise. But the key change is, instead of the default being open, we'll just assume they're going to be closed unless otherwise noted. What was the reaction from the Capitol Hill Press Corps, Chris?
Well, just think of this. I mean, on public radio or any radio, you will hear the slamming of the door if we don't get in. And you'll have seen that, you know, on television and on social media, you know, and you will see a picture of somebody who is a state GOP lawmaker or one of their aides closing that door in front of cameras and reporters. You know, I wasn't in there for it. We were setting up for the noon, you know, and I was a little surprised at that. And I think that, you know, they might be rethinking that, or they're, I think they, I have no evidence of that necessarily, but, you know, it seemed like kind of an off the cuff sort of thing they did. And I know there are some members who really don't like us in there because they want to speak very frankly about things. And they just don't feel they can do that in with cameras or other reporters in there. Certainly in this day of social media and Facebooking live these things. I can understand the point. And I always used to tell people, look, you know, it's not that big a deal because the second they come out, there's four or five people to tell you what happened.
Right. But I think the issue is that they are a super majority. So when they are discussing how are they going to vote or what's the agenda for today or what they want to push through today, it's potentially going to be discussed there. Now, there are not going to be votes there. There won't be necessarily pressure on the representatives to say how they're going to vote, but it's going to be discussed there. And I think that's an important part of it. I did talk to Cameron Sexton and he dismissed it. You know, he said it was not a big deal, like Brandon said. And he said that we're going to be invited to 90% of them, but there's going to be a percentage that we might not get invited. Again, I do think that that change in policy, it's important to watch because it's about transparency. And when we talk about transparency, Bill Lee ran his campaign talking about how he wants to be transparent. He wants to be open.
Mm-hmm. Imagine Bill Lee getting this question in a few weeks. Governor, do you agree with your fellow GOP lawmakers in closing their caucus meeting? And that'll be, you know, that'll
meet the press.
He doesn't want to hear that.
Yeah. That was Chris Bungard, who covers state government for Nexstar Media, a company that owns Tennessee television stations, including Knoxville's WATE, where you can see his reporting as this session unfolds. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it and learned a lot.
Me too. And Sergio Martinez Beltran, state government reporter for Nashville Public Radio. And I want to put in the plug, host of the TriStar State, which airs on Mondays here on WUOT. Sergio, welcome to the group. Welcome to Tennessee Reporting. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And Marta Aldrich, senior state house correspondent for the education reporting website ChalkBeat. You can follow them on Twitter at ChalkBeatTN. And, of course, Marta, thank you so much. We may be checking back in with you depending on how this session goes.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks to all of you for joining us as well. Greg Hill is our producer. Special thanks to Pam Holland at Spotland Productions, who made our connection to Nashville possible today. You've been listening to Dialogue. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.